6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Can you bring it a little closer to your mouth?
Yeah. You're the only one that wants it. Usually people say pull it back further. I like it close. I feel like it sounds very intimate. But
why wouldn't you want it close in your mouth?
I don't know. A hell of a boss. They learned to do it my way.
Is that a hickey on your neck?
Yeah. I'm not going to defend it.
Vacuum?
Or
is this
sure.
from a person?
If you call a beautiful half-black, half-Filipino...
A vacuum.
Then, yeah, I got in a fight with a real Hoover last night.
Suction cup of a mouth.
You tried telling someone I just described like that, no.
Guys, today's guest, Brandon Rogers.
They know, they fucking know this. If they clicked on this video, Joe, they probably know who the fuck I am. And if they didn't, well, I'm just some regular fag. You have to bleep that.
Do I?
I don't know. I can say it, but you can't. It's your show, so you gotta bleep it.
I can call you a... Got cut out.
Yeah, but because you said it like a...
I didn't say it like that. I can say the
sorry,
word.
Sorry. You said it fatty.
I was looking back at our old videos, and we've done quite a lot. When I type in our names together on YouTube, there's so many videos.
Yeah. It's fun because I don't have someone that I have this like real life lore with in the real world. Someone that like I get a like, I don't know. You're the only person I use as a punching bag, and like I love doing it on like there's a whole that whole video where I'm being mean to you. Sometimes I will watch that and I'm like, oh, I miss Joe.
Sometimes I'll watch it and cry.
Yeah, it's nice, but look at we're here still after all these years.
Pretty sick. Did you think that I'd survive this long?
No. Well, I don't think anyone did.
Well, we've been filming together.
I don't think your wife thought you're going to live this long. That's why she said I do.
Oh, right. She thought I was going to tap out after
She's
4 months.
She's up there going, fuck, he's still alive.
He's still kicking.
Nothing works. I use the pillow. I use the fucking...
How does he survive the bleach?
Bleach is... I'm immune to that.
So we've been friends for 8 years, huh?
It feels a lot longer.
It's been beautiful. 8 years ago, you posted Hell in the Hall monitor.
I did.
What was that like when you dropped that video?
Did you know that school tried to sue me?
Shut up.
Yeah, it's a Catholic school. And actually, I was just doing, signing autographs last weekend in Pasadena, and someone came to my table and they said, I went to that school when you filmed that video.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we got permission in writing to go there and film.
Who'd you reach out to get the permission?
Whoever is their liaison to the public. It was some administrator in the office. But eventually, I think it went all the way up to the principal. Once they saw the video, and of course, the kids are going to watch YouTube. They're going to see their school. They're going to talk about a teacher sees it, reports to the principal. So here I am in my late 20s getting reported to a principal.
Did you have to go into the school?
Hell no.
Brandon Rogers to the principal's office? We got to talk to him.
No, they sent me an email and they said, remove the video or we will take legal action. And I asked why. And they said, well, you didn't tell us what the content was about. And honestly, if anyone's seen Hall Monitor Helen, it's really not that bad in comparison to like the arsenal of shit that's on my channel. So she sees this video, or I actually don't remember the gender of the principal, but they see, the principal watches the video, hates it, writes me an email saying that it was under false pretenses, that you didn't tell us that this was going to be immoral and we will take legal action. And immediately right there, because at the time I worked for a law firm. So I take the email to my boss, who's the he's a lawyer, and he said, "Oh well, they just shot themselves in the foot right there with that word immoral, because legally, what's immoral? It's in a subjective word. People can find SNL immoral, right? And so because they're using almost like this religious stance at it, this like like, oh, that's inappropriate. Like, what is inappropriate exactly? And so, because the email seemed more like emotionally based off of like, how could you do this, young man, as opposed from like, well, this was not what you said. You know, their wording kind of got them fucked. And so, yeah, I just, in so many words said, oh, sorry, like, I don't think it's immoral. And, it's your word against mine in terms of what is immoral. And I was pretty like honest about when we filmed there. I sent them the link to my channel. I wasn't like some guy saying I'm doing something entirely different. I said, I'm doing a comedy sketch at a school and, you know, this is what I do for a living. And, so yeah, they, and that was that. I never heard back from them again, but it's, yeah, it's always been on the back of my mind of like, they're building a secret team of lawyers after all these years.
We need to take Helen down.
Yeah, right, right. But you know, I don't know. I went to a Catholic school for a little bit.
It was a Catholic school?
It was a Catholic school. Oh yeah, I should have said that, huh? Yeah, they were very religious. You know, I feel like I learned more from Comedy Central than I did from my time at a Catholic school. And I don't know. I feel like they're trying to teach kids about ridiculous shit, and so am I. I actually have a lot in common with Catholic teaching. A lot of it uses crazy characters and crazy plot points, and they all have stories, good versus evil, who's going to win, right? At least mine, you get a chuckle a little more.
Did it scare you at all that you were being sued?
No, because I had nothing to lose. Like, I was like, I mean, the video, they were threatening to take it down.
But they couldn't even, they can't do that.
No, and I'll, and like
they were just pissed that it was at their facility.
They're
pissed,
and they were like, this can get us in trouble or something like this can get. I'm like, how? I don't say what school it is. I don't show what school it is. Nothing in it is like me saying, hey, everyone, this school, this is what they think and feel, and you should feel this way about them. Nothing, no one's watching that video going, what school is this? No.
Have you ever told this story on the internet before?
I don't think I have. Well, maybe I have.
Wait, it's exclusive. No, I heard you say no.
No, does someone do a deep dive? I think I might have talked about this before.
Wow, first time you ever. Talking about this.
No, calm your tits, Joe. You're going to research this and find the story probably five other places. But the thing is, you know, that video has brought so many people I'll forget about stuff that happens and I'll go back and watch it. It's just like, for someone to watch a video that doesn't take itself seriously to that capacity, and for them to, for their takeaway to be like, okay, if you find it annoying, whatever. If you find, click away from, but like for someone to just take it, I'm going to write this email, and I'm going to, everything I worked for is at risk because of this. I don't know what logic they had behind it, but I mean, just, I can't imagine being that wound up to watch a video like that and have that kind of reaction.
Have you ever gotten in trouble in another situation like that for filming? Because you do a lot of public stuff. You've done a lot. You're always on set somewhere. And I feel like a lot of the times you do ask for permission.
I do. The thing is, I've never been an asshole about it. Especially like today, you see how people are just filming in public without asking people and they get like millions of views, essentially forcing people to be actors in their videos without their consent, right? And then they make a ton of money and it's like so I feel like I've always, you know, even when we're filming in public, if someone's face is featured or even slightly recognizable, I ask at least get their verbal consent. But I've never been in trouble to that degree of, you know, something really scary or really, every time we film in public, I'm always very careful of not making people feel, like they're being exposed or being caught in a time, you know, because then eventually they're going to see it. And then you have a whole situation on your hands. So, I don't know. What was the question?
There's that video, Day in the Park, 31 million views, something crazy like that.
Is it really?
It's up there. It's insane. Shit. Congrats. Right.
Thank you.
When you're filming stuff like that, you're at the park. There's so many people coming by, even Day at the Beach. Do you get people trying to rain on the parade and like, you can't do this here?
Yeah, but now it's easier to defend because back then filming really was something like they're filming here, but now everyone's got a camera out.
Back then it was rare, you're saying?
Back then it was rare, so if someone saw you filming, it was more of like a, don't do this, what this crazy absurd thing no one does, don't do this here, it's public, my kids, you're gonna trust me, I'm not filming your fucking ugly kids. Secondly, now
the funny thing is you would say that to them too,
and I have, well, not in so many words, but I'm like, really, you think I'm filming you? I'm in this costume and you think you're what I'm filming? Fuck off. Nowadays, everyone has a, you know, they're filming all the time. I mean, how often do you go to the beach or somewhere in public and you're in someone's video, you're in someone's photo, you're in, everyone's a superstar now. Everyone's filming shit. So it's like, you do, people, there's more understanding with security. When they see what I'm doing, it's less of like, what the fuck are you doing? You can't do this here. And more of like, guys, you can't do this. Like, there's no mystery as to what's happening. As opposed to when I first started doing YouTube, people would see me doing these crazy things in public and go, what the fuck is this? It's especially nice when the security people know who I am. They still have to kick me out because they don't want to get fired, obviously. But it's done with a sense of, like, niceness.
Yeah. I got kicked out of Pepperdine University once, but it was the slowest kick out of my life as he pulled up on the truck. Joe, what's up? Gotta ask you to leave.
And then it's our duty to find compassion, right? Because then you don't want to make them feel weird.
Right.
And then it's this moment of like, okay, here's someone who's a fan of me. How do I handle them being forced to kick me out? And it can be a very delicate thing because you don't want them to feel uncomfortable, and then that's their takeaway, was that you made them feel uncomfortable in the job when they were just having to. So it's nice when security recognizes me, but then it's my job to like make sure I don't put them in a compromising situation, because sometimes security will feel lenient to even kick you out at all if they know who you are. So I don't want to get them in trouble. It's nice when you go out to a club and security, that's the nice place where they recognize, because then it's like you don't even have to pull out your ID. And then they go, I like your video. And I go, oh, I think. And oh, if a bartender why am I gloating about this? I don't rely on fame to get me kicks. But if someone recognizes me in a place of where they can give me free entry to something or a shot, you know, or a free joint.
I got a free ice cream once. That was probably the best hookup.
You hooked up with them.
For the ice cream, yeah.
Straight people say hook up real loosely.
She gave me a free ice cream. What do they say?
Hookup is a very specific thing in my world.
Like what? Like glory hole type hookup?
Well, let me just say that if your hookup was what my hookup is, I don't think you could be doing it in an ice cream parlor legally or during daylight hours. My dad says it all. Yeah, maybe you and I can hook up around 2 o'clock. Dad,
please, you don't know what that means.
You don't know what that means. It's like, yeah, we're going to fuck each other.
You film at a warehouse and you were finishing filming one day and you had to get out because there was an orgy happening later that night.
Yeah, that's actually, I want to say you're exaggerating, but that's really actually what happened.
What?
So where I film
at my house.
At my house. No, a lot of the studios that I use are also shared with
what?
What?
A lot of the studios that I use are sex dungeons.
Sex dungeons, yeah. Also, they're like the Saw warehouse type places where people are getting mutilated. And actually, I don't know. I mean, the places I film would be ideal to kill someone because they're designed to be, you can't, like, soundproof. And then it's like if someone's screaming bloody murder, even if blood gets on the walls, no one's going to quit. Oh, it's Hollywood. There's blood. Oh, yeah, it's from a shoot. Anyway. A lot of the sets that I use are often used for orgies or porn. In fact, during Bryce, I think it was the first episode, there's a scene where we're sitting around a table talking about cancers. And we had to pause because there was... in the next room over, a furry thing being shot.
A furry porn?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you guys check it out?
Of course.
What's it like?
And also, they were checking us out, too. They would come out into our set when they would take breaks and watch us because they thought that we were interesting, too.
They thought you guys were the weirdos.
They thought we were the weirdos. We definitely were weirdos. But then it was funny because they were in, like, half the fur costume. Like, they'd come out in half the suit, and they'd be like, oh. What's this? And then we would like poke our heads in and look at what they were doing and go, oh, what's that? But yeah, all kinds of kinky stuff happens on the stages when we're not there. I film a lot in hospital sets. You'd be surprised what kind of things you could do in a hospital set. I didn't realize until I saw one day they were cleaning up before we filmed in there. The staff was like wiping down everything and they're wiping down parts of the hospital set that I didn't know you could use. I was like, oh, like stirrups and things like that. And I'm just like, oh, that like, I think it's kind of funny taking medical equipment and over sexualizing it. And like the stirrups became a fuckable place. And then like the fucking, the scale had like lube on the top of it because someone was holding it like this while they're getting, you know, hospitals can be sexy and we've made them so not. But I think we should make hospitals sexy because that's, for most of us, the last place we'll ever be.
I'm going to make that a hat. Make hospitals sexy again.
I'm going to die in a ditch because I want to die in a fucking hospital if they're not sexy.
Yeah, fuck that.
No. Find me in a ditch, I'm going to be fucking diddled ass, torn, stretched open soup at that point. But at least I won't die in a hospital.
What was the most expensive shoot day you ever had?
Oh, you were there. It was when you raised your feet. No, I'm just kidding. No.
When I raised my feet?
No, your fee.
My fee.
No, but you were there, though, you're that day.
Joe, you bitch.
You were there. It was the Blah Blah the Clown, the documentary. That shoot day was the most expensive probably of my whole career. Well, other than Magic Funhouse, but that was an actual show that was produced by like television, and wasn't my money.
Right.
So to me, it was cheap. But it was the Blah Blah the Clown documentary. It was in the courtroom. Do you remember that courtroom scene? We had one day to do it, so I had to cram all of our scenes into one day, and we had so many like big names. There was Jack Plotnick, Anthony Padilla, Trevor Wallace, Marlon Webb, and among other just actors that in general that are, you know, I mean, everyone there was paid, and then the set was really expensive. We were there for a long time. There was just a lot of moving pieces, and we were about to go in lockdown. If you remember, we shot that around January of 2020, and I remember being like, it's a miracle that I got all these people in this place at the same time. I don't know if we'll ever be able to even do this. You know, if we go into this lockdown that's going to happen, I got to just shoot this all now. So that's why we did a whole day. With all those people, and I think it was like 9 or 10 hours. It was a long time, but yeah, I was pretty broke after that.
What's a set cost like that? Like a courtroom set?
That one was particularly expensive. I my price range is really like, I mean, Pure Space is pretty much my go-to. They have like almost any kind of set I need is in my price range. But that particular set was quite expensive. It was like, I want to say it was $300 or $400 an hour.
And you had to get a 10-hour block?
Yeah.
That's bananas.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So was my bank account.
That's crazy. My next question was...
bone dry after that.
You do everything on your shoot days. You're the director. You're the script supervisor. You're acting in it. You're doing all the blocking for everybody. And it's not like everyone's there the day before to see what they're doing. So you have to run over everyone's lines with them and make sure they know what they're doing in each action. How do you maintain all of those skill sets while trying to make sure that the video looks good?
When Disney built Disneyland, to him, it was about the whole experience. He talked about, it's not about, you know, are the rides good? Is the food good? Is it clean? It's just, what was the entire takeaway from when you walk into that park to when you leave? It's that overall experience. And you feel that. It's not like you like it for any one particular thing. When you go there, you're in another world altogether. And I think with stuff like this, it's very like that's exactly the approach I take. It's not about, well, I got to find an editor. Well, I got to find I got to just learn what to do to make this thing exist. And it's that's been my philosophy ever since I was 15, 16 years old. I learned iMovie and I realized I don't need, like, if I can edit, I just really need the equipment. That's it. And it's not that expensive. Camera, laptop. You know, and then I realized, well, then all I need to do is just learn how to write. And then all I need to do is just, and this is before YouTube. Well, YouTube was technically around shortly after, but even then, you can learn stuff from it. It wasn't like you could just, how do you, you know, it was still just like random sketches and comedy and stuff, you know. So it was really, learning stuff was not easy. And people asked me, you know, like, how do I learn how to do, just do it. You know what I mean? Just because... people think that there's all this, like, I didn't have any resources to learn. I had a film class, which really isn't that, it sounds more illustrious than it was. It was a classroom where we just had to sit on, we each had a computer, and we had to learn iMovie individually. It really wasn't a class. It was just forcing us to be in front of a software many of you have in your home already. And if I didn't just sit and learn the software, I probably wouldn't be doing what I am now. But
We all want to feel our best, but let's be real. Some wellness trends are hard to stick with. Taking shots of apple cider vinegar? No thanks. Swallowing giant vitamins? Not for me. Goalie Nutrition is wellness made easy and delicious with their chewable gummies. From apple cider vinegar for digestion support to ashwagandha for stress relief, Goalie's gummies fit effortlessly into your routine. They're made with high quality ingredients, taste amazing, and are packed with essential B vitamins to help you feel your best every day. Apple cider vinegar has been used for centuries as a traditional remedy for digestion and gut health, now in a convenient gummy form. More than just ACV, from ashwagandha for stress relief, plus they're packed with essential vitamins, organic ingredients, and no artificial nonsense. No mixing, measuring, or mess. Just grab, chew, and conquer your day. Made for every lifestyle with a formula that works for you. Plus, they're made in the USA. Loved worldwide. So head to goalie.com now and get America's number one ashwagandha and apple cider vinegar gummies at an exclusive 42% off. Give them a try, risk-free. Backed by their money-back guarantee. Because wellness should be simple, effective, and delicious. Don't wait. Visit goalie.com today. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is simple. Fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. I do have a few friends who have used GLP-1, and it helps get them on the right path to sustain a healthier lifestyle. It's helped with weight loss and confidence. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game right now, my listeners can get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with my code LIGHTWEIGHT at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use code LIGHTWEIGHT to get $50 off your first month of GLP weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. Get started today.
Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code LIGHTWEIGHT. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and can take you to the mood that you're looking for. Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help get you in the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And it ships discreetly to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations. Not only is every Mood product backed by 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code LIGHTWEIGHT. So head to Mood.com, find your functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Don't forget to use the promo code LIGHTWEIGHT when you check out to save 20% off on your first order.
Yeah, I think it all begins with editing, filmmaking. It's editing is the first, because that's the cooking process, right? When you're an editor, you know exactly what kind of takes you need. You know exactly what, you know, what scenes you need, what shots you need, you know what sound you need. You know every ingredient you need to throw it together. So if you know how to edit, everything else, in my opinion, is really just like skills that you just keep doing. Oh, makeup, you know, hair, costuming, you know, those are, you know, things you just, you everyone kind of knows what they need for those things. I think the more you do it, the more you're going to get better at it. And there's certain things that I know that I'll just never be perfect at, or at least if I want to do the directing, writing, like makeup, for instance. If I have a group of people on set and I don't have time, or my assistant doesn't have time to do their makeup, I'll hire a makeup artist for that day. You know, it's knowing when to delegate versus like how much you can realistically take on. And I think, yeah, as long as I get the editing covered, everything else feels so simple. But editing is, well, except for writing. Writing is equally hard, if not tougher than editing, because writing has to come from here, you know, and well, everything has to come from here, but writing particularly is like, if it was easy, we wouldn't be having the, you know, strikes about, you know, it's like it is the epicenter, it's the seed of everything, you know, but then the post seed is what ties it all back together. So it's like writing and editing are like the two, and if you can do those two things, like, don't make any excuses for the bullshit in the middle, because that's all the easy stuff. Yeah.
Do you still edit everything yourself?
Everything. I don't let anyone touch what
you,
I do.
You blew my mind. Do you remember when I came over to your apartment and you were showing me your editing process, and you were doing it on iMovie.
I still do.
Because I went to school, and they were forcing us to learn Avid, and we had to learn like this crazy, they're like, if you're ever in a newsroom, this is what they do it on, you need to bring it in here.
That's what I hate about schools, is they act like it's a set time period. It's a plateaued, permanent time period where it's like, this is how things are done. Yeah, maybe like now or yesteryear, but like, because I was the same way. I dropped out of college. I went to I was studying broadcasting and like television, and they were like, this is what you need to know to be like, you know, on television or to be an actor or to be a filmmaker. This is what you need in the industry. It was kind of this false promise of like, because if I had gone by their Bible, you know, and did exactly what I was told to do in college, I wouldn't have the flexibility to adapt to the world that we're in now. Like, this wasn't around fucking when we were in college. This, what we're doing here? How would you describe this to someone in 2010? Like, it's like a radio show, but we're on, but it's also can be live, but also we're talking about what people, it's influencer, like everything is so new. It's so to say that like, this is a certain way you have to learn things. That's kind of bullshit, because who knows it tomorrow if that's going to be the best way to do it. I really stopped trying to learn algorithm tricks for YouTube. Like, back in the day, it was all the rage to learn, when do I upload? What's the best time? What's the best audio? And now it's just like, I've had videos blow up 10 years after I upload them, you know? And honestly, I just feel like what stands the test of time is if the work is good, you know? Because it's like, I'll have made videos 10 years ago that didn't fit what the algorithm wanted, but I'm like, damn, at least I made it good, because now it's blowing up. You know, it's at least I cared about it to make it decent. So I don't know. I don't know how I got on this topic, but I meant everything I said, and I mean it. Make stuff good. Make good stuff. Everyone says, what kind of videos should I make? Make stuff that's good. People think I need to make stuff for everyone else. That's not true, because then they're not going to like it, and you're not going to like it. No. Hell of a Boss got famous because Viv made what she wanted. She didn't give a fuck what anyone wanted to see on TV. She made her show, that the one she wanted, with the characters she was attached to. And, you know, and I think people can sense that authenticity. I know. It's palpable. You can cut it with a fucking butter knife. You know?
She just posted an episode yesterday. Is that season almost done now?
It is. No, it's 12 episodes.
So there's still two more coming.
Fuck, it's 12 or 14. Oh my God. It's 12, I think.
Is the Hell of a Boss fan base like crazy hardcore?
They are. Yeah, I mean, let me put it this way. I've never been at the epicenter of anything this radioactive before. It's such a crazy fan base. Yeah, they notice every detail, and it makes you feel like nothing's wasted. It makes me feel like when I'm writing a script, nothing's going to go over their heads. They catch everything, and it's so satisfying as a creator to know that everything you make is being savored. Are these ASMR mics?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Fart, poop, whatever you want to do into it.
Oh, no, God. That's what you do. Is that what you do?
To that one, yeah. That's my poop mic.
That's your cum mic.
Tastes good.
Oh, wait, no, it is the poop mic. You just had cum in your poop.
Is for a Hell of a Boss, do you ever get recognized for your voice when you're just talking to somebody and they're like, you're Blitz?
Yes, but that reminds... So the other day I was driving and I saw someone dressed as Blitz.
For Halloween? Or was it just a regular day?
No, it was at a convention. But I was driving to the convention. Someone was walking to the convention dressed with... You see the horns, and they had the whole Blitz get up on. And I pulled over up next to them and I rolled down my window. I said... Blitz! And he looked at me, didn't recognize, or I'm assuming he didn't recognize me. He looked at me and he went, and kept walking. So I'm like, the voice doesn't work all the time. Oh, and the TSA, the guy putting me through the metal detector, you know, the ones that wand, they look at your balls and shit. He told me that he saw I was wearing a Hell of a Boss shirt. He goes, I love that show. I said, I'm him. He goes, okay, cool. I don't know if he didn't believe me or what. So
I'm him too, buddy.
I'm in, yeah. Okay. All right. Me too. So he's like, get past the detector. Let me dig around in your ass. It sometimes works and sometimes it doesn't. But I like to think that my voice is recognized. Well, I heard you watching one of my videos when I walked up. I said, that's me.
It sounds, Blitz sounds exactly like you.
Well, yeah. And people say, they go, do the Blitz voice. And I'm like, I am.
I'm right here.
No, Blitz, there is a distinction. I mean, Blitz is definitely my voice very, very warmed up. You know, when I go into the studio, I have to like joke and laugh and kind of like have a coffee break before I go into the booth with Richard. And Richard Horvitz, you know him from Billy and Mandy, and he's Zim from Invader Zim, Power Rangers. He's done a million things. He's our director, vocal director for the show. And when I get there, he's so amazing at just being able to get my voice warmed up. Like that, like we're talking, you know. By the time I leave here, my voice is going to be sounding different. It's actually really interesting. If you go on any interview, you can go on this one. Go back to the beginning. Listen to what my voice sounds like. Go to the end. Listen to what, you know, both of us. Your voice does change the more you, if you talk for like a solid hour. And so with Blitz, I talk a lot with Richard and Vivian and the whole crew. And then when we're laughing and joking, we've had our coffee. Okay, get in the booth. And then he's Blitz. But I cannot just start as him.
So do you have vocal warm-ups for Blitz?
Yeah, it's just that. Just me, like, just talking. Just sometimes I'll be driving and I'll, or like I'll sing along to a song, anything to get my, like, voice activated, you know?
Do you watch past episodes to get into it?
No, because the thing is, I know where, like, the voice comes from a very authentic piece of me. And
the butthole?
I mean, the butthole, yeah. But you know what I do have to do? Sometimes I have to, yeah, the whole time I'm in the recording.
Hey guys, it's me, Blitz, over
Did
here.
Did you get the take? No, he's some, you know, with some of my other videos, I have to go back and be like, okay, am I still doing this accent the same? Like, I have to make sure I'm doing it consistently the same. But with Blitz, it's so gutturally like a part of me that it's consistent, you know, because Blitz is almost like the voice of me if I've had way too much coffee. And I'm trying to be funny, and I'm not landing it, so I'm just trying harder and louder, and it's just... Because, yeah, I've been there before. I don't know what it is. Are you ever like that where you're at a party or you're in some social setting, and you're just trying to be funny, and they're all duds, and so you get louder and kookier and weirder, and then you realize I'm just drunk and trying to be funny?
I don't really get invited out much, so no.
You also don't try to be funny very much, either.
Do you think you would have ever been able to do what you do with a partner for as long as you have it?
No, someone did try to be a partner when I was in college. It was my channel was like 2 or 3 years old. He actually reached out to me a few months ago. I had to change my phone number because of him. He reached out to me and was just like, hey, fuck you, or something like that. Yeah, or something. He just texted. Oh no, he said, is this still Brandon Rogers? I was like, yeah.
And goes, oh, you responded?
Yeah. Because I still had his number, and I was like, hey, how are you? And he goes, fuck you, piece of shit. In 2009, he wanted I don't even think this story is that interesting, but he wanted to do a partnership channel. He wanted to basically like join me, but he didn't write, he didn't edit, he didn't do anything. He was really pretty and very good looking and loved being on camera. And so that's the only time I've ever really.
What did he even want?
Just to be like, to have like two people on the channel. He wanted.
So was his text to literally just say, fuck you?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then the next day, like my number was posted on something, and that's why I had to change it. But so he basically said, fuck you. And then he posted my number somewhere. And then I was getting all these texts being like, is this Brandon Rogers? Is this Brandon Rogers? And I was like, shit, he didn't. He's still that petty. I mean, in my mind, he's like college age still, but like I'm like, no, he's my age now. So he's like a full ass grown 35-year-old adult doing this shit. So anyway.
What do you think of you being 35 still doing what you're doing?
I'm very fortunate to have been doing it this long, but I also got into it for that. Like I knew I was in it for the long haul from the very beginning. I knew that when I started this channel, I wanted it to be a place of comedy. That people could, you know, like I wanted this to be, if possible, my life in some way or another. I didn't know that it actually would be, but I knew that I wanted to do this for a long time. And I think when a lot of people, when they started channels back then, I don't know if they went into it, and I could be wrong, but I don't know if everyone went into it with this, like, this is going to be, you know, a thing, a plant that I'm going to water and keep for a long, 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 long time. And I was always in it for the long game. And even, you know, I'm so here I am now. I'm like, well, fuck, I'm still here. But I don't know. I it's been like a child of mine. I feel like it's in the sense that it's something that I've nurtured. You know, I created and I've nurtured and it's been with me and, you know, now is old enough to help me. You know, the channel is something that gives me life and gives me, and, you know, so it's almost like when the kid takes care of the parent. And I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about it? You've been doing it for how long?
Same time, 2006. I love it.
How old are you?
21.
Yeah, that's right, because I'm 19.
I'm 18, actually. Sorry, I was off. Because I'm younger than you.
Oh, so that makes everything we did last year illegal.
I'm 33. And okay. I remember making videos when I was 16. I remember I used to take my dad's digital camera out of his closet and I would use it for the day and then I'd bring it back. But then my videos started getting more and more intricate to where I need the camera for like a reshoot the next day. So I wouldn't put it back. And then he'd look for it. He'd know that I took it. He'd get annoyed because I'm not responsible with things. I would have broken it or something. But I would take it to my friend's house. And I remember filming him on his basement couch. And he was laying there. And I scared him. And I uploaded it. It was like a 22-second video. And it got like 30,000 views.
Holy shit. What year was this?
2006 or 2007.
30,000 is massive for that time.
And I was just like... What? Like, I remember the amount of reach that video had of just me scaring him with no context, and he just jumped, and we filmed it in his basement. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
This was YouTube you posted it?
YouTube.
Wow.
And I thought it was just the coolest thing, and that's how I got hooked.
The coolest little square video you ever shot.
It was unreal. It was unreal. It was the worst quality. There was no context, but I just uploaded it, and I thought it was awesome.
I remember the milestones of YouTube getting to, like, when it became rectangle, you know, the aspect ratio change, and then when, like, it became HD, and then you could upload longer than 10 minutes. And
do you remember you used to get medals?
I forgot about that was during the 5-star period, right? Where you could rate
it was during 5-star when you rated it 1 through 5-star. But when you would upload a video, let's say you were like the most viewed video in comedy for that day, you got a medal. And if you were the most viewed for like that week, you had another medal, and you would have like different medals. And at one point, I remember I had like 5 medals on there. I'm like, I'm hooked. I'm addicted. This is so cool.
I was never, I never, I don't think I got any medals.
Really?
Yeah. I wasn't a big channel for a long time.
But didn't your channel blow up overnight?
But that was back. That was in 2013 or 2015. 2015 is when it blew up. So everything before that was kind of a slow fizzle up to that point. But I didn't really. I wasn't featured on any like front page or top whatever. I wasn't. I remember the medals. I remember video responses. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but I never did any.
I liked those. I liked being like, because it would, for those of you who don't know, in the comment section, you could post either a comment or a video. So like vlogging was really popular, just people sitting and talking to their camera. So then people could sit and talk back in a video response. So basically like watchable comments, essentially. And I made a lot of friends through those video responses because it gives you more personal like feedback to your work. You know, it's very low committal. They just click record response. Hey, that was a funny video.
Sometimes it could be hard eating healthy when you're feeling like you're giving up flavor or fun. That's where I have a food hack for you. Washington Red Raspberries are a clean, simple, and seriously delicious way to add more nutrition to your day. They're American grown, picked at peak ripeness, and frozen within hours to lock in nutrients like fiber, antioxidants, and vitamin C. And they have no added sugar, just fruit, as nature intended. I try to get my fruit in all fun ways, whether it's a smoothie, a salad, it's really just a treat. Frozen Washington Red Raspberries are one of the best kept secrets in the freezer aisle. They're naturally low in sugar, high in fiber, and support gut health, blood sugar balance, and overall wellness. And because they're frozen at the peak of ripeness, they deliver big time nutrition and flavor year round. So whether you're trying to clean up your snacks or build better meals, these berries are a total win. You can find frozen Washington Red Raspberries in the frozen fruit section of most major grocery retailers.
And Costco.
If you want to discover new ways to use American frozen red raspberries, get more details on where you can grab them simply by going to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. You'll find recipes, health tips, retail locations, and everything you need to make Washington Red Raspberries a regular part of your routine.
Look for product of the U.S.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Boom, boom, it's in the comments. I miss that. Like, that would be cool if there was a feature where, like, you're watching a YouTube video and, like, you want to, like, leave a comment, but you want to just say it and with your face, and you could just, like, write a comment or just say a comment and be like, that video fucking blew. You know? Or maybe that's why they stopped it.
Probably. A little too harsh.
A little too harsh.
Oh, my God.
Damn. Ask me more questions.
You have a bunch of different side quests. You do stand-up tour. You do comic cons. What's your stand-up tour like when you're going to all these different cities? Is everyone just so welcoming?
Oh, yes. It's always an amazing crowd. And there's always that risk of like, oh, well, like, you don't know what this crowd is going to be like. You know, because I go to a lot of different cities. I like going to new places too. Stand-up comedy is a great way. If you can tour doing anything, it's a wonderful way to see the world or to see at least just the country.
Is it pretty lucrative since it's just you?
Yeah. It's really just me and my assistant and my, I have someone who, like a tour manager that travels with me. So it's the three of us. But yeah, I mean, we get really good crowds and it's always amazing when you're on stage and you just can't see the back of the audience. Like it goes into the darkness. It's like, you don't see where the seats stop. Right. And you're just kind of up there and you don't really see a lot cause you're usually blinded by everything. But, I love it. One time there was a venue, one of the worst venues I ever played at. Everyone there was nice. The staff was very sweet. Everyone was very friendly. But they shared... Actually, no, this was the worst venue I ever played at. Yeah. There was a bathroom. Okay, so imagine the stage like this. There was no backing to the stage. It was
you told us last time.
Oh, did I say it?
Yeah.
I would go in the bathroom and interview the people. Oh, good. I was like, should I say this now? Because I'm afraid that that's inappropriate for me to say that I went in the bathroom with a microphone. But I've already said it on here.
And so. You're still here.
And I'm still here.
What you've been on the internet for so long. I feel like so many people have watched you and like really grew up with you and loved you. Have you had any cool stories from people of the years that they've been watching you?
Yeah. Comedy is an emulsifier for all kinds of people. You know, it's like sports or pizza. You know, it's like something everyone kind of likes. I hate sports. But... you know what I mean? And it can be important to help siblings bond, to help parents and kids bond. I bonded with my dad through funny movies, quoting TV shows, memorizing like Austin Powers and stuff like that. And it's really touching when you hear other people in the world who have had that same experience from your work. Because you know what digesting that feels like when you and someone you love can share funny quotes.
I quote your video all the time.
Wait, which one?
I just look at people and I go, a child. And like the response rate isn't that good because it's so out of pocket. But every now and then I'll get that one person that's like,
I've done that before too, where I was a child. And then if someone doesn't get the reference in public, they'll be like, why are you just saying a child? I'm like, it's the one thing worse than a rapist.
I have to say that to wrap it.
But like, as if that's going to make it better.
What are the Comic Cons like for you?
I haven't been to Comic Con since I did Magic Funhouse. Conventions in
general. Oh, sorry, that's what I meant. How are the conventions for you?
Conventions are fucking great. I am still relatively new to the convention circuit, but it's like a traveling circus. You'll see the same staff in Chicago as you did in Boston, as you did in, you know, Pasadena. These people just travel all over the country. Like some people do it every single weekend, and It's like a home away from home. Once you start to get to know the staff at these different places and they become familiar, you know, then suddenly you have all these familiar, you know, people in a very foreign place you've never been, and it's nice. I love conventions because I love any place where people can feel safe being their weirdest self. I'm a big advocate for people being as much of their true self as possible. In conventions, there's no judgment. You walk through those doors and everyone is in their cosplay that they worked on for weeks or months or years, you know, these beautiful costumes. And not they're not just costumes. They are representations of these people's obsessions, of their innermost love, you know, and it's a place of vulnerability because it's not always, you know, not everyone has the confidence to say, hey, world, I like this thing. And at a convention, it's all that people are doing. So it's an extremely safe space to just be yourself and to not feel judged about what you like or love. And it's a perk that if, you know, the cast of what you love is there, then you get to meet them and get stuff signed. I like being a part of that because you're literally in the business of giving people happiness. You know, people show up and they're happy to see you. I worked in Best Buy for a long time when I was a kid. Like, you know, it was my first job and I got used to people in line being so miserable. They were waiting in line. They're not happy. They just want to get to you to get out of the store. So like conventions feel like the opposite of that, where people are excited to have gotten to you after waiting in line. And yeah, and you know, on a much deeper level, conventions are really helping me psychologically, because working in retail for so long as a teenager, it really fucked me up in terms of how I saw the world. Because I was seeing the world from a new perspective of like, wow, the biggest lie I was told was that when you grow up, you grow up. Like adults were the most petulant, immature, impatient people who didn't care about you. You were just someone in a name tag and a blue, you know, shirt to get their stuff, you know, stuff rung up and out the door. So going to conventions, it reminds me that, like, no, the world is full of good people. And there are people who love each other, love you, that are, you know, there to just have a good time. And they're not just seeing you to get out the door. And, you know, every time I come home from a convention, I'll pull up and I'll just sit in my car and I have to just absorb. Remember how you feel. Remember like how good the world made you feel today. Remember that there's like nice people out there. So, you know, anytime you're having a bad day, just remember this is really what the world is. Not Best Buy. Not, I don't know, you know, when you're scrolling through Insta. It's like, no, those people, and they're real too. You know, they're not like, they're people who, they're not rich or poor or maybe they are. They're like from all over. You know, they're not just one type of person that comes up. And so, anyway, I like conventions because they make you feel super well-rounded afterward. I don't know. I'm rambling now at this point, but I've never explored this out loud. And I think, yeah, this is how I feel about them.
Do you ever geek out over the people you're next to?
Of course I do.
Like who?
I don't know if I talked about this last. I feel like I might have talked about this in the last one, but like the cast of The Office. Or Giancarlo Esposito, if I fucking hope I'm saying that right, sits down right next to me and we had lunch together. And then two tables over, there's William Shatner, and then across the room, fucking Susan Sarandon. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm among these people. I'm allowed to be among these people in this situation. I'm nowhere near them, but in this situation, we're sharing the same fucking food. That's cool. And it's hard to not nerd out. And you have to, because you're there with a sense of like, well, I'm here to do a signing. I'm here because people like me and I have to, you know, be there for them. But it's really hard when you're at that booth and, you know, Christopher Lloyd walks by and like, no, I'm giving my time to my fans, but also there's Christopher Lloyd right there. But no, I'm dedicated. Yeah.
Are you a big Christopher Lloyd fan?
Yeah. Oh my God. Uncle Fester. Back to the Future, of course. He was the godfather of weird in the 90s to grow up with. Oh, and Roger Rabbit when he talked just like this. Oh, my God. It gave me so many nightmares. I hope we got that.
Remember this moment.
Remember it. Remember that.
Remember it.
Yes. Yes. I do this when I have boners. Do you have a pillow on your lap because I'm making you happy?
You can't stand up.
You're going to poke my eye out.
Wait, remember this moment about Christopher Lloyd. Just remember it.
Okay.
Okay.
Why is he going to jump through that door and throw his wiener in my face?
He's been here the whole time. No, I'm kidding. 45 minutes, Christopher Lloyd's been hiding in the closet.
How much did that cost?
I'm like, finally, you hit the trigger word. Christopher, come on out.
Yeah, he's dead.
What the hell is the story that you got shot at in an abandoned hotel?
How are you? You just heard about this?
You never told me this.
How have I not told you about this?
I don't know.
Yeah, I did. And it was really scary. And I still am in touch with the people I was with when that happened. Like, we talk about it from every now and then. It'll come up.
Yeah, so kids shot at you.
Kids. That's really... if there's one thing scarier than someone holding a gun at you, it is a child holding a child.
A child.
Period. They don't need the gun. No, yeah. These weren't just children. These were, like, angry, like, 15, 16-year-old boys. Like, particularly, like, Hills Have Eyes children. You know what I mean? Like, in the middle of nowhere, shot. And it wasn't just guns. It was, like, a shotgun. One of them had a shotgun. Yeah, and then one of them had, I believe, a handgun. I can't remember exactly. But, yeah, there was about three or four of them. And
were they trying to hit you?
No, they weren't trying to hit. I mean, they were trying to scare us, but I was trying to call their bluff and say that the gun wasn't loaded, because I don't know why. I distinctly remember in that moment trying to be someone I wasn't. I was trying to be brave, but like for vanity reasons. Like, I was in front of my friends and I was trying to look like I was the smooth talker. And I just tried telling him, like, no, actually, my dad owns this land. You're the one. Because in my mind, I'm projecting onto them that they're the kids of the owner of this property. But I'm like, for all they know, I could be that. So I was like, no. And I guess they knew I was lying. And so then maybe they were right. I don't know. But yeah, I will never forget. And just, you know, it's a long path. You can't see the hotel from the road. You have to take a long hike through hills to get to the hotel, which makes it extra creepy. It's because by the time you get to that hotel, you're quite in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by hills. So there's you can't see civilization. It's like the Teletubby land where it's just nothing but hills. So if you run into any form of, and that's what made the hotel so thrilling, was that anytime we were there, we used to go there all the time, especially at night. And it was scary because if you ran into anyone at the hotel, there was no help anywhere around. No one would hear you.
Did you ever run into other people there?
Once we did, but it was just like other people, like exploring. Other kids. Yeah, like other kids. Yeah, we were kids. I can't believe it. We were like teenagers still. But that was the last time I ever went to that place. And I have no desire to ever go back. And I remember they escorted us. I don't know if I talked. I think I talked about this in the Comedy Central thing, but they like had their guns raised in their quad, following us back to our car that whole way, like behind us as we're walking. And I remember looking at my friends as we're walking and just seeing them. They're just staring at the ground with this face of utter fear. And my friends were funny people. Like, they were always, you know, very rambunctious and outgoing, and to see this look on their face, I mean, I'm willing to bet none of them had clean underwear. And you hear this, the grinding of the quad over the gravel behind us, very close to us, as we're just walking down this seemingly endless path back to our cars, as they're just holding their guns out at us like this on the quad. And I'm thinking, if they hit a bump in the road, like, where are their fingers? Is it on these are fucking teenagers. I don't know how safe they are with this shit. So yeah, not a lot has scared me as much as that, in my life. Never in my life did I think I was going to die for such a long period of time. I was like, and then I'm thinking to myself as they're walking us back, like, what are their motives? Like, well, they're walking us back to our car. So they're not like, it'd be one thing if they were leading us further into the desert, you know, but they're walking us back to our car, but their gun, like, I was even like afraid to look back. You know what I mean? To see if, like, I don't want to give them any reason to. Oh God, yeah. It's I hope you know, no one has to go. You know, I hope I don't have to go through that again. Holy shit! But I've heard the hotel is still there, though.
We had a slaughterhouse in my town.
A slaughterhouse.
Same kind of thing where it was like you had to take a trail all the way back, and it was pavement from when the slaughterhouse was active, but there was nothing around it for miles. And the story was that this guy named Alan in New Jersey owned this slaughterhouse, went crazy and killed everybody on the premise. and you go to the slaughterhouse, and then there's this other house kind of near it called the Poison House, and there's a sign on it that says, like, radioactive, do not enter.
Oh, that's so cool.
So the Poison House was there, the slaughterhouse was here, and then if you keep going further up the trail, there's probably 10 to 12 houses where the help used to live and his family used to live. And in one of the houses was a baby horse skeleton in one of the rooms. And in the slaughterhouse was everything. They had the big freezer. They had the pig pens. They had the chicken coop. It was wild.
Yeah, that's, we can't have shit like that in L.A. Mm-mm. Because if something like that exists here, it's been like filmed in, graffiti, destroyed. I love that about, was it a smaller town?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's saying, why I love that about small towns, because those abandoned places are like preserved gold mines.
Yes.
And the people,
like, only the kids would ever go.
Right, and it's almost met with a sense of respect that a lot of the people who would go there wouldn't demolish it. It's like a kept secret, you know?
Where do you get your dark humor from? Somebody asked that.
You know, I want to say I get it from my, because my family's all very comedy-based. They're all, like, a lot of them are very, like, my dad especially is really funny.
Yeah, but your dad came on set one day when I was filming.
That's right.
Such a good time.
Yeah, you met my dad. But he's not dark.
No, he's like goofy fun.
Yeah, he's a goofy funny guy. I don't know where I get my dark, because I've always been very dark. Even like when I was a kid, I remember like not being afraid to joke about death, not being afraid to joke about things that people would otherwise find traumatic or upsetting. And I don't know why specifically, like, I don't know. I mean, personally, I think the place that humor is needed the most is a funeral. And I don't know. I don't see things that are macabre or depressing as like, nope, don't make fun of that. That they're going through a process. Don't. I think humor can be peppered tastefully in even the darkest of times.
Is it safe to say your funeral is going to have fun in your funeral?
I want to be suspended on wires. I want to be in everyone's hors d'oeuvres. I want a little bit of me to be in the food at my funeral, so everyone goes home with a little bit of me in them.
So are you in the coffin and in the food tray?
We'll have to do a little bit of each. I think the coffin's fine from the waist up, because sometimes they close at half, right?
Yeah, they close the bottom half.
So I'm just going to be a fucking stump beneath that. And then the rest of me will be in the hors d'oeuvres. My penis will be hidden somewhere, and whoever finds it wins my balls.
Like an Easter egg.
Like an Easter eggs. Now, what are they going to do with my butthole? I don't know. That's a party favor for sure, but who's going to get it? You want my butthole?
Sure.
All right.
I'll display it right here.
No, you're dying before me, so.
That is not true.
At this rate, you're practically older than me.
That's not true. How many energy drinks are you drinking nowadays?
Enough to keep me this young.
My friend. I told my wife that I saw you walking to go get your energy drinks the other day.
Yeah.
And we were trying to figure out what gas station you were going to.
Oh, yeah. Well, they all have the one I like. I can go anywhere and it's there. But they're not sponsored, so fuck you.
Your videos are completely storylined. Do you ever get writer's block?
Mm-hmm.
How do you overcome that?
Walking helps. Going for a walk. Especially in this neighborhood. Like we live in a very... I'm not going to dox us, but I think it's safe to say we live in a very walkable neighborhood. It's nice. There's flowers. There's trees. And
do you do that to clear your head, or you do that to do your thinking on the walk?
It's... You know, when you're out and about... Actually, driving, you can do the same thing, too, if you feel like driving. It's seeing new objects triggers your brain, and like whether you like it or not. Just if you're in your house all day, you're looking at the same things, and it could trigger your mind into thinking things that are creative. But I think being out in public, you're in an uncontrolled environment. The things your eyes are going to be looking at isn't necessarily yours that you've curated, like in your own home. So all of a sudden you're seeing this strange looking person or a red car. It just gets your mind thinking in ways that it wouldn't have been pushed to pivot when you're home. You know, so I think just getting out and experiencing the world, just anything besides a setting you created can get your brain. And it usually does. Also, walking physically, getting the blood going through your body helps. It just helps your brain. I can't describe. Your mind, your body, and your soul are all connected. Like, I truly believe if you're like really good at something, usually it's because all three are combined in it somehow, you know? And yeah, I've never half-assed anything that didn't involve my mind, body, and soul, and whole.
Would you say that that's your Brandon time when you're just doing your walks?
100%. That's when I'm alone with the fucking gods. You know what I mean? Like, that's when I'm... you've seen that movie Soul from Disney with the dead man? When he goes into that place where they're, like, being creative. Whatever that ether is. I forget what that... But it's a real place. That's where I'm at when I'm walking. I'm. It's a divine period of time for me. It's a sacred mental state, especially when you get in that flow. I silence my phone. I specially curate the music I'm listening to, and I drink a lot of coffee, and I just try and maintain. If I could be in that state of mind all day, I would. And but when you do get in that place, it's very special. Then you just have to really open your mind to all the possibilities the ether can give you. You know, especially when you have a story in place, but it just doesn't work. Being in that flow state allows you to better pick a breaking point and where you're going to pivot that story to make it work better. Or as opposed to like, oh, I've been trying to change the ending, but really what I need to change is the beginning. Or what I really need to tweak is this other thing. And so I think, yeah, going out and walking around, making your brain see new things and get the blood going through you. Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
When I get an amazing podcast... Or if I have like this crazy guest that gave this awesome story, as soon as they leave and I shut the door, I like, yes, woo! And like I do like this really embarrassing thing. Do you do anything like that when you drop a series?
Yeah, I
how do you celebrate your wins?
If I have so much happiness and I can't contain it, I do this a lot.
Me too. It's
yeah, and I think I scare people sometimes when I do it because I don't announce that I'm happy.
Oh, you do it looks in front like of people.
Yeah. It looks like I'm angry. And I think people think because I'm like... I guess it's similar to anger because it's like a surge of physical energy that you're like exuding out of you in a way. But I can get so happy that I just look like I'm going into a fit of rage.
What was the last time that happened? When the Streamies asked you to host? When you
I did it on set recently. Recently, and I don't remember why I did it. I was really happy for something, and I remember doing it, and every time I do it, I feel like I go down a little bit lower in my assistant's book because he witnessed this very carnal thing. Carnal is that word? He witnessed this very raw moment of me, and I don't know. I love that, and I also feel like it increases the happiness by like celebrating it. It's like you're acknowledging it and you're manifesting in a physical, you know, it now exists in the real world. Yeah, yeah. And this is one of the happiest times of the year for me. I don't know about you, but I love the holiday season in the industry here in LA because everything is shut down. You know, essentially after Halloween, the industry is very, especially after Thanksgiving, it's just a dead zone until January. That means that actors are available, sets are available, everything's available. I can be a filmmaker and all my toys are free because no one's being used by Big Daddy.
Do you see yourself continuing where you are for the next?
You know, it's funny you say that because before I didn't. This was never the end game. This was always a means to being in Hollywood, to being a film director, being but I've gotten a taste of that. And I have a lot of friends who hit their big mark and got a TV show on a big platform. And the more in the shit that I am, I mean, it's a great thing to get your own show, but I'm learning that having your own show with a network and it comes with certain elements that, you know, are necessary to be a vessel that large. But I'm also learning the pros and cons of that versus a smaller production that I pay for, that I get to upload directly to YouTube, directly to my fans without someone, you know, with deep pockets telling me how to finesse my work for the people watching it. But then again, having a show on a bigger level, it comes with a lot of other perks too, but then there's more cooks in the kitchen, right? So to answer your question, did I ever think... I do think I'm going to... in some way or another be making videos but the landscape is always changing. Who knows if YouTube is going to be what it is now in 10, 15, 20, 30 years, or if TikTok's going to be, you know, we've seen the rise and fall of giants and the success of unsuspecting little guys. You know, anything can happen. So, but I think no matter what happens, there's always a place for comedy. There's always a place to laugh at it. You know, I laugh at the world. And yeah, I like to think that if we were this age 30 years ago, or even 20, you know, whatever, I think we would just be, we would be doing something like this, but maybe for public access or for radio, or I don't know. But we would still, I think, be doing some version of this.
Public access, for sure.
It sounds so dirty, doesn't it? Just so cheap and whorish. Public access.
We'd go to the town rec center, shooting in the basement.
Town rec center, get wrecked.
And we'd have our wacky little set designs.
Our wacky little wrecking public access asshole dungeon sex.
Channel 88, midnight slot. Watch us.
Channel 69. We'll watch you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a two-way set.
It's a two-way set. We'll see what you're doing at home.
Yeah, pervert.
Ooh, that'd be great. A TV for perverts where it's like it's a pervert. It only plays one channel, perverts, but there's a little camera, and they watch you.
That should be your next series.
Oh, that's
series.
Omegle.
TV. For- Omegle shut down.
What's the one everyone uses then? I always see like memes of people still using these.
Omegle literally just shut down last week.
Oh, they finally realized that perverts are on it?
It's just dicks.
Is it really? And I'm surprised that it lasted this long. It's little kids like looking at live penises, looking back at little kids. How is this like? How has it lasted that long?
I know. I'm surprised. It was on for like 12 years.
I ended up dating someone for a short period of time that I met on Omegle.
Really?
Yeah.
They were near your area?
No.
Where were they?
Oh my God! I don't.
They Drop were, the story.
They were in France. And
did you meet them?
Yeah.
In America?
Yeah. They came to America. I met them. And then I flew to France. And I lived with them for a little while. And then...
Wait, what? Brandon, I've known you for so long.
I don't talk about...
your that. Perverted adventures?
My perverted adventures.
I knew about your other adventures. I didn't know about this one.
I have a lot of lives that I've lived in this lifetime.
That's such a good one. Okay, so you went to France. You lived with this guy you met on Omegle.
Fell in love. He comes back to America with me. And I say, hey, I'm in college. If you want to be with me, this is a big part of my life. I'm in college and I'm doing this show called Theater Class. And he was very supportive. He enrolled in all my classes with me and lived with me here in America. And yeah. And then, you know, yeah, we eventually broke up. But
did he go back to France?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But. It was a great year of like an alternate reality for him out here. He made a lot of friends and
was he nice?
Yeah. I mean, he's French, so as nice as he can be. But he was very sweet, and his family was very welcoming. They let me when I lived over there. They treated me like one of their own, and there was a lot of really good food over there. And I think that's what I miss about him the most. We've been
the restaurants that you ate at.
No, the food of his I ate at. He would always cook all the time, and he made so many things: foie gras, quack masseur. I can't say the I don't know how to pronounce, but all kinds of things you could do with duck liver and cheese and bread and balsamic, which is different from balsamic vinaigrette, which I learned. Balsamic is sticky and poignant, but I smoked a lot of cigarettes. He got me into smoking. but yeah, I've had my French era is one I don't visit in my mind very often.
I can't believe you moved there.
And then we went to Spain because it's just, you just drive down and you're in Barcelona and we.
Did you film any videos over there?
I did. Yeah.
Are they on your channel?
I think so.
Oh, how did I miss this?
It's like, I mean, this is back in 2000.
Six or seven, right?
It was like 2010, I want to say.
Wow.
Yeah.
To finish this off, yeah. And don't candy coat it. If your entire channel got deleted and you can only save one video on there, what video is it?
Oh, I feel like probably a day at the beach or a day at the park or the Power Rangers. I don't know.
Only one.
It'll be the one that I would have uploaded right now, if it happened right now, because I could upload tonight all my videos in one video.
No. Your entire channel gets deleted. You lose your hard drives. You only have one video that can be saved on YouTube.
You really liked saying that. Okay. I think a day at the beach. Because it makes me happy. I remember being there at the beach. Like, it was fun. It was a fun video. And I think if I had only one video on my channel to rewatch over and over, that would be the one, because it takes me to a better, like, a better place, both like time and place. You know, that was just a very happy, it was 9 days and we had a blast. And then whatever, one of the fucking ones we filmed, I don't know. But
wow. We filmed at the beach, and that was one of my favorite days filming with you, too.
I want to film more stuff in places I enjoy being at. I think that's what I'm going to do differently.
Do a video in Big Bear where you rent a cabin for the weekend. That would be really fun to do. I want to come film it.
I've been wanting to do a video in the forest for
a while. We could do a horror movie style one.
Oh, that would be really fun.
Let's do that this winter. That'd be so fun.
I'd be down.
Yeah, let's do it. Me and Ilya, who used to do this podcast, we rented a cabin at Airbnb, and we got like, it must have slept like 15 people, because all of our friends were coming out, but no one came out. It was just the two of us. It was really fun because it was snowing. We went snowboarding. It was this beautiful cabin.
You snowboard?
Yeah. And we were so isolated. It was the best time.
Oh, wow.
And it has like the cabin town vibes, where you can go get hot cocoa and there's snowboard shops.
This is in Big Bear?
Yes. It's such a good video setting.
Holy shit.
We should film there. That'd be so fun. A horror movie.
I would love that. I really would. You know, people have been approaching me for horror lately.
Why?
I don't know. I got approached to direct a horror film, and I haven't made up my mind yet if I want to or not, because I really do want to. But I don't know.
Is it a big commitment?
Yeah. And I as much as I want to, but then you mentioned that, and then Liam was mentioning horror to me. It just, horror has been coming up a lot lately, and I'm just like, I kind of do want to do something scary, but we'll see.
Brandon, that would be so fun, because it's like such a cool setting.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Wintertime, no one's doing anything, so let's do it. It needs to have a hot tub.
It had a hot tub in the backyard. Yes. It had a grill. It had, obviously, the kitchen, a pool table. There's like a bear skin on the wall. It was the perfect horror setting.
Oh, my God.
Did you ever see that movie, The Guy? It's that same setting. It's literally that setting.
Hot Tub Time Machine?
No. I think some guy goes to rent a cabin in the woods, and his timeshare guy is there, and he ends up...
It sounds really familiar. Wait, keep going. Wait, what happened?
He ends up like wearing a mask, and he like hits the guy over the head with the axe.
Yes, I
not
know
intruder it. Or not stranger. It's like a one word movie, but it's really good.
I know what you're talking about, though. But all those movies are just they get under my skin, because I have to. You know, I live by myself, and I'm convinced every night there's a rapist upstairs.
Do you live in a two-story?
Yes.
So the rapist is in your house upstairs.
And upstairs. Yeah.
Do you go check it to make sure that no one's there?
Hole first. No, but I am scared. It does get scary, because you'll hear something and you go like, "Well, I know no one's here." Do you ever get afraid that you have dementia, like, and it's you're actually 80, and you're like if you fart or you piss or something, and you're like, "Wait, okay, I'm in my bathroom in my house. I'm looking for reflection. I'm this year's old. Okay, good. I'm not." Because sometimes if you have dementia, they'll be like, they'll think they're 20 or something, and they'll be like, "Oh, I'm just pooping in my house," but really, no, you're at the library and you're 80.
No, I've never checked that before.
You should always check your reality.
Okay.
Yeah. Always check your reality, because, yeah. Every time I look, okay, good. I'm still this age. All right, wonderful.
Hey, well, Brandon, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you. If there's anything you need a pixel, I'm sorry. I'm just now noticing on this angle here.
It wouldn't be the first time you showed yourself on YouTube.
Yeah. And actually, it's not. I've had to remove my penis.
Several times. At the hotel in that video, right?
Yeah, wait, I told you about that, yeah.
The London hotel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
I screenshotted it before you changed it. It's my background.
It was nice and big that day.
Thank God.
Thank God.
All right. Guys, go leave this video a like, comment something nice for Brandon. He needs it.
Yeah, I do. I need it.
And go subscribe to his YouTube channel. It's really awesome. Go watch Blame the Hero series. You don't have to watch anything else, but go watch the Blame the Hero series. Leave a thumbs up on it and say, "This was shot really well."
Yeah.
That's the one I shot.
Joe needs it.
I mean that one. All right. I love you guys. Lightweights. Out.
Out.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Oh my God. It looks like our cups came from the same, I just noticed on our, it looks like.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a Real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a Real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your Real ID at tsa.gov/realid. That's tsa.gov/realid. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.